Hi everyone, I'm Katie Dawson and welcome to Super Creative, a podcast that delivers candid conversations with inspiring women who are thriving in business. Today on the podcast, I speak to Sophie Hurley, co-founder of luxury luggage and accessories brand Honest Wolf. Sophie, along with her husband and co-founder Sam, are part of the third generation to farm at Papanui Estate. Nestled in the heart of New Zealand's North Island, Papanui Estate covers 3,300 hectares and is home to over 25,000 healthy, happy sheep. Their property has been thriving for more than 80 years and they hope to keep it alive and well for at least another century or two. Honest Wolf launched in June 2020. Sophie and Sam were inspired by the phasing out of plastic bags and were looking for a way to utilise the high quantities of wool produced on Papanui Estate. Together, they came up with Honest Wolf's first product, the Casual Shopper, a biodegradable, fashionable shopping bag made from wool. In a few short years, they have since expanded their range to include high-quality tote bags, luggage, wallets, and more, designed in the country to withstand the city. The brand has grown quickly, and they've even opened a beautiful flagship store in Hunterville right on State Highway 1 between Wellington and Taupo. I think Honest Wolf first came onto my radar when I saw a snippet of their episode of Country Calendar being shared on Instagram last year. They popped up again in my feed earlier this year when they reached out to their online community to raise an amazing $90,000 for their rural counterparts in the wake of Cyclone Gabrielle. What Sophie and Sam have been able to achieve in such a short space of time is incredible. Living remotely, running a very large family farm, raising two young children, and launching a brand that has a greater purpose beyond just the products is no mean feat. It was wonderful to chat with Sophie about all aspects of the Honest Wolf journey, from concept to creation, logistics and lessons learnt, and then looking ahead to the future. Their journey is super inspiring. I am in awe of this young couple. They are quite a bit younger than me, and the drive and passion that has created Honest Wolf. To learn more about Honest Wolf and to check out their beautiful luggage and accessories, visit honestwolf.co.nz or to go behind the scenes, take a look at the brand and get a glimpse of life at the farm, you can follow at honest.wolf on Instagram. I know you will love my chat with Sophie as much as I did. Now, before we begin, a small technical note. Something randomly happened with the audio from this chat, and without going into all the technical details, there are a few sound issues with this episode. You might just have to toggle the volume a little bit during the episode. For some reason, my sound is louder than normal and Sophie's comes through a bit quieter. And I know for those that know me, you will laugh about this as my voice is always the louder voice, but this is truly a technical issue. So anyway, it does seem to get a little bit more even as the episode goes on, but just bear with me. The content is still very well worth the listen. Right, on with the show. Hi, Sophie, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First of all, can I get you to describe who you are and what you do?
Cool. So I'm Sophie Hurley, and my husband and I live on their family farm in the Rangitiki region, up at the Tarukina Valley on their family farm. And we've got two children, Harry and Gussie, who are 3 and 1. And alongside the farm, we've got our online business called Honest Wolf, which we launched nearly 3 years ago, and we create luggage and accessories using the wool off our farm.
It is such an incredible business, and I've started with this podcast explaining at the beginning why I was interested to talk to who I'm talking to. And I was thinking about Honest Wolf, and I think I came across you through socials, and I think it was Actually, earlier this year with the flood relief. But I feel like I've got a memory of maybe seeing your brand before that, actually, when you relaunched your brand. And then I realised that I'd seen something. I don't think I've watched the whole Country Calendar, but I saw that. Yeah. I haven't seen it because when I knew I was going to talk to you, I didn't want to see it because I like to get a fresh chat. Then you start looking. I'm like, you've got 22,000 followers approx on Instagram. You've got this massive business. And then I was like, and you've got a flagship store. And I did have to Google where Hunterville is today in the middle of nowhere, but it's so cold and it's a big decent business. Like, you've got employees. And I was just like, wow, you're like the scale of what you're doing from seemingly the middle of nowhere is really impressive. So I'm just, firstly, I'm dying to talk to you about it all and how it's all come about. But the second thing I did just want to tell you is that I'm obsessed with your house.
Well, where you live,
my dream, one of my, you know, like, I've got, I'd love to live in New York and all these different things. And one of them was always to live in the most incredible villa in the middle of nowhere, that kind of thing. And so I feel like you're living that part of, like, my dream. I always look at the photos you put up and I'm like, that's what I want. And then, you know, I'm imagining living in the middle of the nowhere comes with its own challenges, but
it does, definitely. Like, we definitely, yeah, when I first moved up here, I'm originally from Wanaka. Grew up on a farm in Mid-Canterbury. My family now live in Wanaka, and so, yeah, grew up on a farming family. But then when I moved back to Sam's family farm up here, had never been to the farm before, and only once in the middle of the night after quite a few drinks. And so I don't really remember that. So when I actually moved up here, I said yes without actually being there
before. Oh my gosh.
And I just always remember, we live up off State Highway 1. At that point in time, it was about 45 minutes from State Highway 1. And I would just go corner after corner after corner. I was in the car with mum and dad and Sam, my husband's parents. And I was like, and they were like, yep, just one more corner, just one more corner. And it's quite remote, but but we've never had the feeling of being remote. I guess this the lifestyle that we chose to live is we're in the car a lot, but we might live remote, but we don't want to feel remote.
And it's a different world, I imagine. I'm not from any form of farming background, but it is a different world these days because you're so connected online. And like you say, it's how you choose to live as well. But I feel like back in the day, I used to work at field days 10, 15 years ago, and you'd meet these people that were coming into town once a month. And you'd just think, sheesh, that's full on. Okay, you mean you started, I like to go back. I like to take it back to the beginning. I'd like to get a feel, you talked about it, but where you're from, did you study?
Yeah.
All the background info to this point today.
Yeah, I've got three siblings and we grew up on a farm in Mid-Canterbury in a place called Mayfield, kind of near Methven, near Mount Hutt, if anyone knows where that is. And yeah, grew up on a farming family there. And then I went boarding school in Christchurch. And while I was at school, a lot of my time was spent in a rowing boat. I probably focused on that 90% of the time and in school 10%. I was just fully into sport growing up, and that competitive nature has always stuck with me. And I remember when I finished rowing, which was huge part of my life. And when I finished rowing and I told my coach I was going to stop, he always said, okay, whatever you're going to do, make sure you do it to the best of your ability. And I always remember where we were standing when he said that to me, and it's always stuck with me. And
how old were you when you decided to stop rowing?
I think I was 22.
So you'd given it a good, just a high school thing. You'd progressed it.
It took us internationally. Lived away from school in our sixth form year and went and rowed world champs in sixth form. And then I actually stopped in the first year of uni and had my first year of uni experience. Yeah, I went from training three times a day to drinking three times a day.
Yeah.
And that was really tough year at the same time, although it was a lot of fun, but that change of lifestyle was definitely off me. Had a lot of fun, but yeah, just the not having a goal towards anything, and yeah, it was a really hard time. And then I got back into rowing in my second year of university, and then continued to do rowing alongside of uni and still have that fun lifestyle, but also rowing and study in the background. And then I stopped. Yeah, it must have been about 21, 22. I think I got back injury and it was time. Stop. Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you study at uni?
BCom, marketing and tourism. I remember I didn't know what to do when I went to uni, and I asked my brother, who's a couple years older than me, and I was like, and he was already at Dunedin University. And I was like, what am I going to study? And he told me that it'll become marketing and tourism.
You're like, okay, yep. Go. It's so full on that they make you choose what you're going to do at 18, isn't it? And I know it's just part of life, but it's a big decision. Cool. So you finish uni, you finish rowing.
I got a job. It took me a while to get a job out of uni, actually. I sold Mrs. Higgins bucket cookies.
Love it. Yeah, good. Got to start somewhere. Yeah. Did you know what sort of job you were looking for? What were you looking for?
Marketing job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Professional role.
Anything? Were you just, did you have an idea?
I applied for a lot of grad positions.
Yeah.
Keen on the marketing sales. I didn't want anything. I wanted a good platform to start off. I was looking for a business that I could learn a lot from. And yeah, so that was my university summer. End of university, built up some money through selling cookies. And we
love it.
And then found my first job, which was a junior marketing assistant at Working Star.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, which is a menswear clothing company. Mm-hmm. Which was cool because it was a first role, small business at the time. More office at the time, and so I got my help in lots of different areas of business, and then from there went and worked for Brewcor, beverage company, and some sales roles, and then went for some marketing roles and failed a. I got offered a junior marketing role, and they got me to do a psychometric test, and. Mm. I failed the personality part. The feedback that I got, I've actually never really told anyone this. The feedback I got was that I wouldn't stand up for my opinion if I really disagreed with something. And it's because in the psychometric test, they ask you, if you don't want to go to a movie that your friends want to go to, would you still go, for example?
Mm.
Of course I would. Well,
of course I would. It is. It's not a big deal. Yeah. That's so funny that you lost a junior role in that respect as well. Did it impact you at the time?
I literally got off the job, the last person, had it in school presentation, put it, and then they were like, oh, actually.
I can't believe that they would not take you just on that.
Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
And then after that, I went overseas for a year and lived in London, worked as a nanny for Jessica McCormick, jewellery.
Cool. Yes. Obsessed. Yeah.
She's a friend of my sister's. I'm going to live with her and help the baby for a while. And then, Sam and I were over there and he said, do you want to move back to the farm after we traveled around Europe and Africa? And said, do you want to move back to the farm? And when we made our way up the hills.
Wow. So you were quite young. Like, that was early doors, really.
I think I was 25 when I moved.
Sheesh. To make the commitment to move to the farm.
Something I never thought, like, I would do at such a young age. A lot of my friends were all living in London for quite a few years, and I always thought that I'd be joining them.
When did you meet Sam?
When I was living in Auckland.
So you travelled together and you'd had some adventures.
But Sam had been away and he was ready to.
Ready to.
So
what year was that?
That was 2015. End of 2015. And then, basically being in the middle of nowhere gives you not many career opportunities. So I got a job in Fielding, which was about an hour and a quarter's drive from where we were living. And so I'd drive in there every day, 5 days a week.
Jeez.
So I spent quite a lot of time in the car. I did that for about 4 years.
And were you like, this is cool? Or were you like, I hate this?
I was flatting on the farm. Like, I was
right
from where I was actually living and in a job where, it was just not. I think I always had this desire to work for myself and, but I never had a business head really. Like, as I said, I was rolling, but I just knew that I just wanted to create our own path and not live this life in a car.
And I guess it's almost like a blessing and a curse, right? Obviously, it wasn't the ideal situation, but by doing that for 4 years, you're like, this is not me for the rest of my life. Then I've got to do something else.
If I didn't live up here, it would have been a different business because this is our story. But I always wonder if I didn't live up here, would I have a business? Like, maybe pushed in the direction to create something.
Yeah. Out of need and out of necessity, and then you start to get creative. Yes. Okay, cool. So you're working, that's 4 years, commuting back and forth.
Like, when I say commuting, it's like, we live 40 minutes up this, it took an hour and a bit to get into town, but for 40 minutes of that drive, it's like windy.
Yeah, that's intense. Off, yeah.
Single road. Some days I wouldn't get to work because there's slips on the road, trees down. So it was a commute. I knew it was sometimes you're in Auckland, you spend an hour or whatever in traffic.
But it's different because you're like, that's all talk to us, but you're stuck. You can, I don't know, look on your phone. I don't know. I'm imagining you're concentrating. It's proper driving doing it like that. It's not an easy,
But I guess it gave me a lot of thinking time, would come back with all these ideas of things that Sam and I wanted to do. And we did come up with a lot of business ideas from those time. And he felt like I wasn't really there either, and just coming home at night time and we'd leave me again in the dark of the morning. Wasn't great lifestyle for either of us. And then plastic bags are getting phased out of the country. And then at the same time, the wool prices have been in decline for many years. But at that point in 2018, it was not great. So we wanted to use our wool in a new way. Previously, it just solely been going into carpet, and price was diving, and we knew that we could use wool in something else to hopefully get a better return on it.
Is this you and Sam? You're from a farming background, but are you guys just chatting? And Sam's like, man, the industry's suffering. What have you, like, you're just talking about life, and you're like, we need to think of something else.
I think that sort of was happening in the background, that like chatter.
Yeah.
Plastic bags is happening in the background. And then it was literally one day I came home and I said, how about a reusable shopping bag out of wool? I don't know. I can't remember what spiked that thought, but I just remember getting home. I just know those two things were happening in the background, and I just remember getting home and talking about it. And then we actually went on a honeymoon. This was must have been about our wedding honeymoon time. And I remember on our honeymoon, it was really when we thought we could get a sample. We actually pushed the idea and started reaching out to people to try and put the idea into fruition. And
it's quite interesting, isn't it, when you get that one idea that, you know, like when you have loads and loads of ideas of different things and you're like, and then it goes away or it doesn't sit. But then you just find the one that you're like, no, I am interested in pushing that. So you get that idea, you're on honeymoon. How do you start? A reusable shopping bag made of wool. Where do you go from there?
I think I remember we were sitting by the pool and we literally were like, where do we start? So we asked our wool buyer for a contact. We're like, where should we? Got this idea, what should we do with it? I think we sent him an email, and then he was like, I don't know. No, he was really good.
Yeah.
Was like, shit, let's ask around. I don't know. Let's see what we can do. And so he was really helpful in getting us the contact. But, and what he could do, but the people that we were getting caught in touch with, like, no one could really help. No one had the manufacturing opportunities in New Zealand we wanted to make a felted wool product.
Mm-hmm.
And the felting wool products getting made in New Zealand were not of the quality that we wanted it to be. There is felt being made in New Zealand, but it's not for what the standard that we wanted. And the one company that we did have an opportunity to make a sample with, but knowing now, we couldn't have done it anyway because of the quality. But then they were like, no, we're not going to make a random sample for a small potential business. So then we got, long story short, lots of people in the mix, but got put in touch with contact in India.
Mm-hmm.
And that started our relationship with our manufacturers in India. And we went through a design process with them, did some drawings and put together some ideas of what we wanted to do. And
had you already started that? Had you already started doing some drawings? And at that point, had you progressed it past one bag?
Like, yes, was. Let's hit the supermarkets and let's see if we can bulk sell wool reusable shopping bags in the same matter that you've got your jute ones that you've got, those red ones that you
were. Yeah.
You know, that's where we were. That's the market that we were initially trying to tap into. And so we were not focused initially on style or just about getting the material and then getting into a reusable style shopping bag. No different style to what you already see. So it was just about focusing on the material that it was made from. When we got that, the first sample was terrible and the fabric was terrible because we'd never designed a bag before. But
was it terrible, but you were like, but you can see the potential?
Terrible, see the potential, but Sam is super particular. So he was a big factor in getting the material right, getting the stitching right, getting all the details right to get this first bag how it wanted to be. After I've done multiple samples, he was the particular person getting that right. And then And then I think when we got that first sample back that we were happy with, we got the price of it, we were like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, like, this isn't going to be reusable shopping bag at supermarkets.
Yeah, I think and then we thought, okay, maybe we should go down the sort of NOSH line, not luxury supermarket, but
yeah, gourmet supermarket, higher end, yeah.
But then alongside that, we're actually like, oh, hang on, we could build our own brand, build our own product range. And that's when we launched into the ideas of not trying to create anything new, not trying to bring out a crazy big idea that no one's done before, but just replacing what's currently in the market with a sustainable option using our wool.
So how long did it take from that first talk to India and you get happy with that first prototype? How long did that process take? And I guess you had to ship your wool over. How did you know how much to ship and what to...
Yeah, I think we initially shipped... We took a risk and we initially shipped like a couple of 100 kgs over there, thinking that we will... Because you can't make a sample with your wool on a whim. Like, you can't do one
wool. Yes.
Without made first. And so the focus was using our wool and getting it made into the material we wanted first. I think maybe the very first sample might have been made out of their wool. And then from there, we were like, okay, we've got to make sure we can actually use our wool to do this. So that's when we chose to send a certain portion of our wool over. We did that alongside creating a logo and a brand name. That was like the first, it's weird what you focus on first. We spent money on getting a logo made and then we created our name. But yes, those two were our investments. But yeah, would have been no more than a couple of grand to get the wall over there.
I think sometimes doing the branding part helps you kind of visualize and get on board with the brand. Because when it's unnamed project, you know, whereas when you start to brand it, you can really start to see what it could be. What it could become. Yeah. Where did you get the name Honest Wool?
So Honest was, it came because using honest materials. So using our wool off the farm and showcasing how we farm the sheep and getting, putting that across in an honest way alongside New Zealand leather as well. And then Wolf as being a leader among the pack and hoping that others will use wool in a new way. So whether that be other farmers wanting to put their wool in something else, hopefully that drives them, or whether it be customers that have never come across wool before or don't know much about wool and they want to use not just our wool products, but other wool products in their life as well.
Cool. So you got your first bag, you've got your brand, and by this stage you're like, okay, we're going to focus on what would you say luxury?
Yeah, luxury, affordable luxury.
Yeah.
Luggage.
Yeah. Okay.
It's what we are now, but
yes.
we probably still didn't know what we were.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
But we just thought, okay, there's a casual shopper, we called that first bag.
Yeah.
And that still exists now.
Yeah.
And then we're like, what colour should we do that in? And just played around with different dyeing of the wool. And then decided what other products we wanted to introduce to the range. And so once we were happy with the casual shopper and the colours, then we used those same colours and built them into new products as well. Because we had, I think the minimum kg to dye was like 1,000 kgs.
Right.
500 kgs, I can't remember.
So you're like, we can't just do it all casual shopper. We do need to have a couple of,
I think we had 6 products that we designed before we launched, but this was over 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that was a 2-year, you're still working, are you, at that
still
stage?
Working.
Yeah.
And then I was pregnant.
Right.
So the first year still working, is this business actually going to happening in the background? And I'm pretty sure both our families were like seeing samples and they were like, what are you guys doing? And then I was working and I'd get these samples and I'll be like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do when I go on maternity leave. And then each sample came back better and better. And then the first year was a lot of prototypes. Second year was trying to get the fundamentals of the business and get our product range sorted, get our website up, get our shipping organized, how we're going to launch this. And all of that sort of happened in the last year to 6 months. And then COVID hit.
Oh. Oh, cool. Noah's traveling. So that's exciting. Had you had Harry then?
In February.
And then you launched in March.
Where were
we supposed to launch in March? Yeah.
But pushed it back till June. But that was for multiple reasons.
Yeah. Well, it's quite ambitious to launch 1 month after you've had your first child at the best of times.
And he had a bit of a rough start. He was unwell. So he had to have surgery.
Right.
COVID and obviously it wasn't the right time. So we wanted to wait.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You just must have had so many things. See, and obviously a baby's health is the like number one priority and all of that. Plus you've still got this all whirring around and it's intense.
When I was in hospital with Harry, and I think the day after he was born, the first COVID case hit New Zealand. But it was also the same day of our first photo shoot. I was still in hospital. I wasn't obviously at the photo shoot, but I remember seeing these photos come through while I was with Harry. And then we were like, what's COVID? And all these signs are getting put up around the hospital. And
it's weird to look back on that whole time now, isn't it? So you had the photo shoot done. Were you like, look, I know the timing's not going to work. I'm going to be having a baby and all that. So I'll arrange it, get it done. And did you have some trusted people that you knew?
I met up on a photographer. I'm put in touch with him. And his name is Nick Walker. He was in Auckland and I was having Harry in Auckland. And so I based myself in Auckland before I had Harry, and so I'd met him a few days before I was due to have Harry, and I was like, you go for it, you know what you're doing, I don't know what I'm doing.
Love it, that's amazing.
And they were great photos, and then we didn't end up using them for a few months,
but, so you launch, how much do you reckon you sunk into research and development and getting everything?
I think it was about $60,000.
Oh yeah. So that's actually quite reasonable over 2 years. And And does that include like brand photography, all that sort of stuff as well? Just all of that?
Everything to launch.
And did you guys just self-fund that, just do it out of your savings? I guess you're not $60,000, one big chunk all at one hit. You didn't seek investment or anything like that?
Then the family farming business.
Cool.
Because there's a bigger picture to try and get a better wool price for the farm.
Totally. Yeah.
So I had the support there.
Yeah. That's cool. And I always love knowing that stuff, because I think the thing is, you see, and we all know it because the more you have these conversations, you see these beautiful brands and you think, how on earth? But a lot of people don't see the years and the risk and the, we'll put a couple of grand to ship the wool. And
the big risk when we're coming back with these products that a lot of people, our families were seeing, and they didn't look great initially. And so for us to keep investing our own money and the farm's money into, there's a big risk. And so there's a lot of trust there.
But
we did have a vision for it. 2 years, that's a long time without any return. I think that, that $60,000 was also a lot of the initial money before we actually decided, like a lot of that $60,000 was actually into product. So I can't remember, say 10, 20 grand's worth was actually in product that we could sell in the end. So it wasn't.
Oh, yes. Okay. You've got something to sell from, from that. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. So June 2020, you launch.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. What happens?
So we built
live a website,
Built a website through Ella from Made Studio. Shout out to her. She's awesome because she designed our logo at the time and our website. And I'm pretty sure for 2 years she was working on this, and she was like, is this business ever going to happen? She was great. But so built that. Big thing for us was social media, being an online business. And we wanted to do a lot behind the scenes. And so we did a few teasers, but I didn't even want to get ahead of ourselves and launch Instagram like 2 years.
Yes.
Before. So only pushed that like a week or two before we started. And then we launched, and I think we just shared it on our own personal pages.
Like friends and family, here you go, this is what we've been doing.
And it just from there, that for the first few months of the business was word of mouth. I think from the first night we were packing orders into until midnight every night.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So it launched, but it took off.
Took off from night one, yeah.
Amazing. Do you remember, I was having a conversation with someone the other day, that the first time they got a order from someone they didn't know? Do you remember seeing and it being like, oh, it's not just mum ordering, or that must have been exciting.
Well, I mean, the first couple of nights it was like friends or mum.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. And then I guess the next few nights it started to being like, oh, I don't know that name. And then it just started to go from there, and we quickly sold out in the first month or two.
So six products. How many did you produce?
I think we got 100 of each. I think that we did. The minimum was like 100 or 150 of each.
Yeah.
And we sold out in the first couple of weeks or month.
How cool is that?
Which was cool, but it was also like, oh, shit, this is quickly growing and people are going to land on our website and there'd be empty products. Yeah, it was just about building the confidence to get our numbers right and still working on that.
Yeah.
A couple of years in now. That's how it started.
Cool. So you reorder and you're just slowly growing. Well, not slowly, obviously at a decent pace, but you're just growing. You're just an online business. And
we're just packing the orders online each day. I've got considering where we live, we would still, I think a key to it was our quick delivery. So we had a spare room in our house and we would store the boxes and pack the orders from there. But we'd have a mailman come up every day, our courier packages, and they could be delivered to somewhere the next day. Which I think, considering where we live, was a big part of the puzzle that made it work. And being online at the time of a lot of New Zealand growth and local buying was big. So that storytelling was huge for us. So we did a lot of behind the scenes work on through social media. So that's a big reason why I think it grew so quickly, is because of the connection that it had to already so many people within New Zealand in the rural industry struggling with wool prices, the wool product already. Yeah, initially it was just a lot of rural farmers.
One thing I really notice about your brand and what you do is that you do a lot of content behind the scenes of the brand and who you guys are and what you do. Have you done that right from the beginning as well, like sharing your own stories and
been a lot of what happens on the farm, what Sam and all the boys on the farm are up to, what's going on behind the scenes of the business. And with our product designing as well, we've had a lot of feedback from our following to help design products sometimes, or just get feedback on certain colours. But I think having the community to help us with that just creates interest. That was our big marketing tool for the first year and a half. We spent no money on marketing.
Yeah. And that's just you. So you're being a mum on the farm, at home, and socials, doing some emails, doing some, I'll go down and take a photo of the guy shearing sheep or whatever. Did you have any sort of structure or plan around it at that point? Or you're just, that could be a good idea. Maybe I'll do that
let's do that. Or Sam would sometimes send me stuff off the farm and I'd be like, cool, just that. And
yeah, great.
No planning, nothing behind it. And which you can probably tell by looking at it. But
no, I actually think sometimes it's the best way to do it, because it's the best way to learn your business, and you really learn what tracks and what doesn't and what people like and don't like. And if you have preconceived set plans right from the beginning, it never quite works that way. And like you say, you get feedback, or you go, hey, actually people are really resonating with this and this time in their life, and it might be different now to what it was 2 or 3 years ago. It's just
And it's as it's grown over the last couple of years, we've tried to figure out what sort of things we still do share.
Yes.
And I've probably held back a little bit more on showing so much of family, showcasing more of the farm, but then also trying to get that balance right and constantly you're like, is the balance right today? Is it tags, too much family, too much farm? Or
yes.
So I just make sure that there's a nice mix, so you're not always the same thing over and over.
So at what point did you start to go, okay, we need to add some more products?
Probably quite quickly. So I think we launched with the six products in different colours. And I think we quickly realised, shit, we need to use more wool and get some more products out there. And there was initial products, but there was always ones that we'd wanted to do. In the
I was going to say, you must be constantly like, that could be cool. That would be nice to do. Or...
But it's really, it's like, it's like important that we haven't got ahead of ourselves in terms of what you want to bring out, and got to bring it back to, we're doing luggage and accessories, and it always brings, you've constantly got, because we ask for so much feedback with our Instagram following, you're also getting a lot back of product ideas.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, can you make this? Can you make that? And awesome to hear. But at the same time, you've got to be like, okay, why?
I can't do everything, and it's got to have a purpose or a
reason why we're creating what.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, new product ideas all the time. Constantly got something. Constantly got a sample being made of something. Takes about 5 to 10 samples. We're happy. And that can take a long time. Like, we've been creating something for the last, and just because it might take a couple of weeks to make the sample, and then it might take a week to send it, and then just with life, Sam and I figure out, and the girls in the shop trying to figure out what we want to change about it, and then it's back. And
So, and you factor all of that into your business now, right? Like, the development process of a product isn't a super quick thing. It's you've got to get it right. And
I would say it takes 9 to 12 months.
Cool. So when did the flagship store come about?
So when did we launch? So once we outgrew sending out orders from home. So in the meantime, it was Sam and I sending out the orders, mostly me, but Sam would help when he could. And then it's realized that I was spending a lot of my time packing orders and not being able to grow the business.
Yes.
So we had a girl called Rosie who was living on the farm, and she was looking for work as well. She found herself up the valley and with her boyfriend, and was keen on work, and I was keen on help. And so she came to help us with our customer inquiries and packing out orders. And then once we outgrew needing space at home and her needing to focus on other parts of the business as well, we thought we'd try a 3PL. In case people listening, it's a place where you send your product and they connect to your website and send out product for you. And we had a really bad experience. I think it was the company that we went with. A lot of companies do it and great experiences, but we chose a company probably based on price. And I think I didn't spend enough time researching other opportunities that we could have gone with. And we started getting complaints about our packages being late or not packaged. People had seen us because we were literally showing on our social media the time that went into packing each order and notes. And it's ordered off us before, and they saw how it arrived when we sent it versus how it was sent to by this 3PL. And so we're getting these complaints and we're not seeing the product anymore. It was landing to Auckland and then going out to Rakka. So it was complete disconnect and big mistake. But learned from it.
How long did that process last? Like, how long did you trial that for?
5-6 months. And again, we were meeting with them every week to try and change it. Just wasn't working. So we then wanted to bring it back locally, but we didn't want to bring it in the house. And so we were looking in the region to see what we could do. But then we thought Hunterville is right on State Highway 1, is our little town, and we're going through here all the time. Let's look for a building here that we could send out our product from. And then it was really hard to find a spot in Hunterville. They're all popped out.
How big is Hunterville? Is it a main street, really? Or has it got a bit more because it's got farming places and stuff as well?
It's a farming service town. A really cool bookshop, vets.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But because it's right on people, if you're driving from Wellington to Taupo or wherever, it's straight through it. And it's such a huge opportunity for our town, and people stop. And when this building came out right on the corner of, you can see it as you're driving down the hill into Hunterville, an opportunity came up for our building that we're in now, and the rental was ending for the previous people. And we thought, well, how about let's ship our product out of here? And then when we were starting to renovate the building, we realized we actually should make it into a retail shop because we are right on State Highway 1. And so that happened, and it probably took us a couple of months to get it painted and ready for retail and net was in July last year, July 2022.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And now, and I had our wee daughter Gussie in June.
I love it. You're like, I just always like to really,
yeah, really
put a lot of heavy pressure with the children and work.
Like, but thought we were going to launch before I had.
Yeah.
So we took over in April and we're like, yeah, it'll take a couple of weeks to paint it. And we just got more excited as we started.
Yes. Did the vision grow as you, like you say, you start off, we'll just ship from there and then you're like, this could be retail. And then what does retail look like? And obviously you want it to be a nice experience. And so what's it been like since you've launched the retail shop?
Really cool. Yeah. So you walk into our store now and we've got two girls in here every day, open 7 days, and two girls in here, and it's a working shop. We send our main business is online, and we send all our orders out from here every day. And so you can walk in and you can see our product on the shelves by then and there, but you also see our product getting shipped out and constantly packing orders to get them out. And so you see the story behind what the girls are doing there. And then now, but then you've also got a nice retail side, and we've just introduced coffee.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got coffee too, don't you?
Yeah, it's cool. We do like a free coffee with purchase, just building on the experience in store. And
can people come and buy a coffee as well? Just come by and buy a coffee, but then if they're going to purchase.
And a lot of, and then as someone is coming up and saying they want to buy a certain bag, then we say, we'll also get a free coffee.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just a nice little experience. And
how?
Yeah.
I think it's such a clever idea, because as for a lot of people, retail is struggling. And I remember going to some talks years ago from some trend forecasters talking about retail and the problems that it's facing and how the kind of the experiential design is key and these multi-faceted spaces. So you've kind of ticked all the boxes. Like, you've created a beautiful space. It's a standalone, like it's your dispatch. So it's standalone. You don't have to have the retail really.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you have to. Like, it's a standalone business on its own, just the dispatch. But then you've got a retail arm. And but then you also offer a really wonderful experience for the client or even just a visitor to come and experience the brand. And they might not buy that day, but they might come and get a coffee there. And always remember that store and then need a bag in a year's time and purchase it from you. So it's just so clever and it ticks all these really great boxes. It's marketing, it's dispatch, it's brand, it's all of it.
Yeah.
Clever.
And to build on that as well, because a big part of what we're doing is trying to use more wool and tell the wool story to people that haven't necessarily had so much to do with wool in their lives or don't understand the qualities of it.
Mm.
And so not only are we doing, we're decided to introduce other New Zealand wool products as well. And so now we sell some really cool brands in here. We've got like Ruanui blankets, Mount Salmon station blankets, Wilson and Dorset sheets.
Yes.
We've got lanolin products, which is the oil come from wool. We've got it in hand cream, or what I've got, really nice wool socks. Like, lots of different wool brands to showcase everything that can be made from wool as well. And so also if people know a lot about our brand and might have a couple of our bags already, they can also come in to store and see other things as well.
Yeah, it's cool. So what does the business look like today in terms of product range? You've got the store, a sort of an overview of what it looks like today.
But yeah, we've got our online business being the main part of the business. And then we've got a couple of girls in our store and obviously our coffee. Our product range, we've got about 60 SKUs.
Wow.
But that includes
colors as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many product types?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. I actually don't know that on the top of my head. I feel like saying 12.
Okay, cool. So with lots of variety and color and all that kind of thing. And you offer things like customization and all these little extras as well.
I agree, is a big part of business. Probably half of our business is when people want to add their initials onto a bag or a last name or something. So it's...
Do you do that in-house now, or do you have someone that does that for you?
We have someone that does it for us.
Yeah.
So we send our product off to Robert Embroidery and Palmy.
Cool.
Comes to North End and they do that. And then we also do corporate. That's another arm of the business, is corporate sales, client gifting.
Yeah.
Or uniform, or
we can embroider company logos onto our range as well,
or not.
So, and that's a big arm as well. So trying to deliver products to corporate customers that is fitting that sustainable New Zealand that they want to get.
Which is more, obviously, more and more needed, right? Because people are not doing drink bottles or USB sticks anymore. It's just different. So how many people work in the business? And tell me a bit about your role and the different roles of who you've got working for you.
So employed full-time, we've got Brooke and Annabelle. So Annabelle is our store manager. She is in here 4 days a week and, just manages our store, manages our inventory of our wholesale products that we have in store, and just manages the day-to-day. She also looks after some of our corporate opportunities. And then we've got Brooke, who sends out all our online orders every day and manages our customer inquiries that of people that have already purchased. And she's in here 4 days a week as well. So they alternate. They both live rurally on farms as well, having a job local to them that they haven't had to drive an hour and a half to get to.
So good. Yeah.
Hopefully helpful. And then we've got two girls who work in the weekends. So they alternate on and off. And everyone has had to train to learn to make coffee.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have a barista or no? You're just like, you all just can make a coffee pro.
Everyone
making coffee. That's awesome. Yeah.
And we've got Kakako coffee.
Cool. Well,
we've had Kakako before that. Yeah. Coffee. Yeah, so I think Annabelle went from having no coffees to now she has three a day.
Yeah, I love it. Yes. Just because she can.
And she just loves it there. And that's everyone that's full-time in the business. And then and Sam and I. So Sam, depending on the time of the year on the farm, he dives in and out of the business. He's really involved, specifically with product development and getting certain certifications and working with bigger picture. And in the summer, he didn't really have the time to focus on it.
Yes,
pretty involved. And then I am, obviously in the business. And then we've got a few companies that help us, so they outsource. Mm-hmm. So I think big fear of mine was employing people. So Sam was a big driver. He could see me solely working in the business, but clearly needed to outsource. And it was a big fear of mine, was employing someone and having that responsibility of someone's full-time salary. So that at that point was when we outsourced. And so we've got a designer who helps creative, and then we've got digital marketing gang. and I contract a girl to help us out with development of the business as well. Yeah.
And then your role obviously is just all of it. Like a bit of everything kind of thing.
Shit show.
Plus being a mum and doing all that stuff that you have to do just to keep a life running. And
there's just, it's a pretty tricky balance at the moment. Because where we live, we don't have any daycare. And so it's awesome. I've always wanted to have a business that I can do with the kids at home. And it just means that everything is a bit of a shambles.
Yes. Do you have any help then? Do you have
got a girl. We did have an OPF for 6 months. Mm-hmm. It was great. Was awesome that I could balance both being home with the children but just being tucked away in the office or coming down to the shop last minute. And that was great. And now we've got another girl who lives on the farm and she helps me out a couple of days a week.
Great.
So I pop in here and get work done. And then she also works tonight. She's our weekend girl.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's all a big family.
So awesome. I think a big part of what Sam and I were trying to do was because like me and other girls that have found themselves on the farm with partners. The job opportunities aren't really there. And so when we want to now, if you move to our farm, there's always going to be a job opportunity with Honest Wool, whatever that may look like. So,
how cool is that?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. One of my questions is, what are you most proud of or highlights? Like, that must be one of them, is creating this world and this brand and this business that is so much more than, on many levels, is so much more than just a business and a retail shop.
Yeah, that is, it feels weird saying it, but it is a big, like,
because it's so difficult when you've studied this career, and a lot of rural women find it. They've had this career and that just doesn't need to stop. Like, no matter where you've ended up in the world, it was just, if we can offer something to girls that have ended up somewhere that they didn't necessarily thought they would be, but they can still have a job opportunity, that's cool that we can hopefully offer that ongoing.
It's, and also the other side of the story, which is the wool and the sustainability and farming and the future of farming. We've talked about it, but one of my questions is around the ethos and values that drive your brand and business. And you've talked about a lot of those just by way of describing who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I think, yeah, being sort of family environments of business, but also with the wool that we're using, we not only want to use our wool, but want to grow the story of wool, and also eventually not just want to use our wool, but other farmers' wool to get them a better price. And it's going to take a long time to get there, but
it's early days as well, right? Like, it's the early days for the business. So what does a typical sort of day or week look like for you?
I think in my mind, I'm always trying to get the balance right of, I don't ever want to regret having young children and having a business, and I'd never want to, I want to make sure I'm not missing out on things. So I'm constantly trying to get that in check every day. So just always trying to work on that balance. It would always just be with the children in the morning until, say, maybe 3 or 4 days a week. At the moment, it's 3 days a week working during the day, and then every night would be working as well once the children go. It's get up with children in the morning, then usually try to pop down to the store and work from office in here or from the office at home, depending on, sometimes I can get a lot more work done at home. Obviously when customers come into store and you don't want to be sitting on your laptop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, try to either work from home or the office. It would be managing a lot of our companies that we contract.
Yeah.
And manage them with our marketing plans, or working with our agent and getting our product inventory right, or developing new products, constantly trying to get back to those unread emails.
Yeah.
And just developing certain parts of the business and just working closely with the girls in the shop. And depending on the day, whether I'm at home or in the shop work wise, it would be a mix of all those things. And then the other days in the week, I try to make sure that I am not working when I'm with the children.
Yeah.
Which is always a hard balance, because you're always behind. I feel like I'm constantly behind.
And sometimes when they're just like playing on the ground, you're like, it'd be so easy to, just check an email, and then you get distracted. And
I just trying to be better at just trying to tune out. And it's a tricky balance. I think that someone said the other day, why don't I showcase the difficulties of the balance on social media? And I was like, I'm not here to be an influencer.
No.
I'm just facing our behind the scenes and the business. And I used to show a lot more family, but I would never want to perceive that it's easy. Like, it's...
Yes. Yeah. You're
constantly on. Yeah, just with anyone, well, any mum anyway, but in business as well, you're just constantly on. And I think that it does take a toll. And it has... You can just be extremely exhausted, but that's just life, and that's how we want to live it at the moment.
And I was actually saying this to someone yesterday as well. When you have like passion and drive for something, and it can be, for a lot of people, it's different things. It's a blessing and a curse, right? Because if you were like, look, I'm cool with the 9 to 5, or I'm cool with just being a full time mum with nothing else for the next wee while, then great. But the problem is, when you have got that little passion, you just can't, you're never quite content. And there's joy of that, but then it does make it hard as well, you know?
Yeah.
So, biggest highlight so far, or highlights?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. A big one would be opening the shop and selling not just our products, but other wool products as well. So we're bigger than just ourselves. There's a big industry change there that's needed. So we're just trying to be a small piece of change and trying to get wool used. That, and then a year before, a laptop sleeve was chosen as a gift to the APEC delegates.
Ooh.
That was a pretty cool highlight. So it was chosen with between all the right people in government to gift. I think it wasn't about the sale. It wasn't about that or anything, but it's just the fact that our product was chosen as a New Zealand gift. 25 people around the world from that conference.
Oh, that's such an honour and a kind of validation of what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it was a shame because that conference was supposed to be in Auckland and big thing for New Zealand, and it was online in the end. But yeah, I think it just showed what the product was all about, and that was a pretty cool moment.
I was going to ask if Country Calendar was a highlight. Because I want to watch it now after we've talked, but I feel like, when did that happen? How long ago was that?
Business, not necessarily personally. but yeah, it was in April 2022. So
cool.
Before we opened up the shop, and Country Calendar got in touch with us, and we were just not sure whether we should do it or not, just because of the exposure of you personally.
It's yeah.
Pretty terrifying, but we just thought that we met with them. And they just lovely, and we were just like, and they were like, what do you want to get out of this? And they were really great at ensuring that what we told was the right story that we wanted.
Great.
And so we were like, look, this is bigger than us. It's what's happening on the farm. So it was a lot about what was happening on the farm,
mm-hmm.
but also what we were doing with our world. And the exposure for the business is why we did it, because it was a great marketing opportunity to see behind the scenes of the product. And yeah, it was a big highlight. There was, I think on the night it screened, there was like 30 or 40,000 people on our website that night.
Was there an obvious flop? Did sales boost for a couple of weeks or anything like that?
Yeah, I think it took us from what we were getting each month to probably getting, we did a month's worth of sales in a night. And then it just changed our view on what we should be getting each month now. Just into doing some more marketing and doing more PR around the business. And so now we constantly have PR on through our PR agency.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stepped us up into the growth stage. And now with the store, it's amazing how many people come through and said, oh, I recognize you. I think recognize your brand name. I've seen, oh, there's Country Calendar. But we didn't have the store then, but yeah, it was a good growth.
What a cool thing, even though I know you said it's a bit embarrassing or whatever, but in years to come, capturing that moment in time and shot really beautifully and all of the things that come with a professional operation, you know, like...
Uncut footage, $700 or something, and I purchased it because I was like, there's so much footage of just Harry running around. I don't know, the boys on the farm and all that footage that you don't otherwise get. And you see the uncut stuff. No one else wants to look at it, but whatever. And so that side of it was cool.
So my next question, it's around marketing. And I'm always interested in, because that's my background, I'm always interested to know, what do you find works best for you? Like, where have you found some success in marketing?
Well, I think new business-wise, we didn't spend any money on marketing in the first year and a half. And I think using social media and the opportunities of word of mouth, and that for us was huge for a business like ours when it's got a story to tell. But when we were ready to spend money on marketing, and it was a whole new science behind it, we just wanted to spend our money wisely and get the people spending the Honest Wolf budget the right way. And so it's about finding the right people that know the science behind the marketing strategies and putting that into practice and changing things where it's not working. And there's a whole side to the digital marketing space that I don't understand. And so finding the right people there. But we've focused a lot on PR. Well, over the last year, we've brought on an PR agency, Lomas Kerr, and they've been awesome. And we were concerned that a lot of the story being told about Honest Wolf was about Sam and I. And we wanted, that, but also growth and the side of the story, just about the products, about the wool, about not just about us personally.
You want people to fall in love with the products and go to them first rather than, oh, we heard about this cool business, so we'll buy a bag.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where the direction we've been heading in.
Cool.
there with Mums Kerr, and that's been, a cool transition, and the exposure that we've been getting around that natural side of marketing, getting stories out that way has been cool. And then, we're trying to get our product in front of people that hadn't seen it before. And so we're now looking at events. And we've got a little spoiler. We've got a pop-up space happening in Auckland in November.
Cool. Yeah, that's great.
You might have seen a launch recently. It's Space 4 in Britomart.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah, just launched a new pop-up area right next to Juliet Hogan and Ortolana. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be in there for 3 weeks in November, amazing, which is very exciting. Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
But I guess hopefully that helps as marketing. But a lot of social media behind the scenes, organic social media. And then we've got our paid strategy and in our PR side.
Again, we've talked about some of these things as we've talked about your journey already. But what would be some of the bigger challenges you've faced, do you think, over the last couple of years?
It would probably be the quick growth, although it sounds great and you're selling out and it's all very exciting. But it's the how we juggled that around the realities of where we're at with our family, personal life, and how quickly do we want to grow. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, and we want to make sure our product's right before we are just pushing play on getting all our product out there. So getting our product development suited to the timeline of where we want the business to be, and having the confidence to put in those, once we got there, having the confidence to put in those larger orders to fulfill that growth. So it's been a challenge there of getting that right amongst the costs of shipping, the balance of trying to get new staff members on and when we do that, and that 3PL I was telling you about. And that was obviously something needed to change, and we rushed into the 3PL. And so I think the challenges have been making these rush decisions that I've had to stick with them, but I've just learned if something's not going right, change it.
We've talked heaps about the brand and the marketing side of it, but then also, of course, there's the whole logistical side of what you're doing, and even just like getting wool to India and
the whole
logistics and shipping and that, and then getting product back and delay. Like, that's the thing. You've got this whole other aspect to your business that's not just the pretty stuff. It's the...
It even starts from... on farm, it starts with the wool. What comes with it? What? How much do we have? How much can we use, or how much we're going to put to carpet? And we have to foresee what we're going to sell to, and take that wool like 6 to 8 months in advance of when we need it.
So does he do that more than you? Like, he'll be the guy going, okay, this is what I think things are going to look like, and
And he manages how much we put aside for bags or for carpet or for whatever it's going into, but I manage the logistics of getting it from our scouring company in Hawke's Bay to India. A few learnings along the way there as well. Made a few mistakes.
How long will you be able to support the business just with your wool?
So we're probably using about 30, so we have about 130 tons of wool that we clip annually. And I think our last shipment was about 16 tons, and that is a full container load that would run a year at the moment. So we're using about 30% of our wool.
Would you like to use the whole lot?
I think we'd probably always keep a little bit with carpet and other pies. I think it's important. But if we can use a lot more of our wool, because we are getting a better return on our wool now, we purchase our wool off the farm for a better price than what they would be getting it if they were selling it to carpet. And so if we can get that better kg price for more of our wool, and then other farmers wool, we're a long way off it. One thing has 1 kg of wool, really. So a long way off. But
everyone must be happy with you now, though, right? After the initial 2 years of going, what are you doing? Are they embracing the vision now? It's so cool. Okay. Who would you say have been the biggest influences in your business so far?
For me personally, both Sam and I, it would both be our parents, I'd say. which is probably not the answer you were expecting, but I would say for me and my three siblings, we've always seen our parents juggle various businesses of us growing up and the drive that they had and the balance of parenting and businessing. And yeah, a lot of advice comes from mum and dad, not necessarily in the retail space or designs of things, but just about the bigger picture side. And when we reach each growth stage, we've got a lot back and forth with them of should we be employing someone else or should we be going internationally or should we be, what should we be doing? And they're just really great sounding board. They've been there before. And yeah, so it's a lot with them, and Sam's the same with his parents as well. And then we've got a business advisor, which has been a really good person for us to bounce ideas from. And we meet with them quarterly. And being my own boss, I guess, is someone to chase me up on things and measure where we're at. So he's been great too.
It's such a great idea to go down that business advisory road, because although they work for you, it's like you've got someone to tell you what to do in a way, or like you've got someone, you're just like, what do I do? And they, obviously it's advice, but I only know from my small experience doing what I do that sometimes you just want someone to tell you what to do. Yeah. But and
that's like, if you've got this problem and you can say, who do I go to fix this problem? And he might not be the one that fixes the problem, but he tells you go, or he might give you advice on the best agency or someone personally to use this or platform, like this organizational platform, Asana. He was the one, lots of different things. I'm probably undervaluing his work. He does so much for us.
Cool.
Advises us on which next person we should be employing or what role that should look like.
It's a great, it's so valuable having that role in your business, I think, especially when you want to grow to scale and you are, there is a bigger goal and purpose. You need someone that can help you potentially not make some of the mistakes you've made or take those learnings.
I think initially we were wanting to go internationally last year to sell our product internationally, do the same thing what we're doing but overseas. And he was a big one to be like, no, you're not ready. Huge market, New Zealand still. Get things right here. And he was right. We've got a lot to fix behind the scenes of the business. We do that. And I'm glad that he's held us back from that, because you wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to that whole growing before you're ready and all that kind of thing, right? Like which is ultimately a goal for you. And yeah, what's the best business advice you've received then? I'm sure you've probably received lots. Or what's the best business advice you would like to pass on?
I would say, yeah, probably the growth, just managing the growth and not getting too ahead of yourself and just getting things right. And that did come from our business advisor. Yeah, it's just, can get so excited when you see the growth, but yeah, just managing that accordingly and not getting too ahead of yourselves and making sure the decisions are well thought before you make them.
That's great advice, I think. So on that note, and based on what we just talked about before, what is the future for Honest Wolf? And you talked a little bit about internationally. So, you know, one day that's a goal. Talk to me about the future.
So at the moment we're juggling the idea of, we've previously said no to wholesale, really strict on it as well. So no wholesale. We wanted to be in control of our story, and our product management, like inventory management, was not ready for that. But now we're in a place where we think we can look into wholesale opportunities with the right companies and being really specific about who those are. And so that's an opportunity for us. We potentially want another store to get our products out into the market, and then in time to come, in the next year or two, international markets, and get our products in the likes of Harrods is the big goal.
Yeah, cool.
And get them in places where the value of the fibre is truly, New Zealand wool was really represented.
You've got such a great base in which to grow from, and like you say, as you get all of those sort of logistics and everything in place, it's worth getting all of that. But because you do have such a unique story, or it is unique, but it's a New Zealand story as well, you've got such a great platform to jump from, and it'd be so interesting to see where you go.
Well, hopefully we'll see. We've got some really cool products coming up that we're working with other companies as well. So we're doing some collabs, one that we've just hit go on for the manufacturing side, and that should with a big New Zealand brand in the next year. That might take, by the time production's around, maybe 4 or 5 months away. But
cool.
Focusing things on there as well.
Awesome. Exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you passionate about besides your work? What brings you joy? I know there's probably not a lot of room in between kids and work, but yeah, what do you love? What brings you joy?
It would be my children and just being, we've got a, Sam and I like to make sure that no matter how hectic things are, is that you get that time away from the farm. And we love going out on the boat with the children, getting out skiing and just being in adventure and take them out and showcase them life outside of farm life and work life. Yeah, so we try to get away as much as we can and have that balance. Them and and with our friends and family, and because my family live down in Wanaka, we head down there quite a bit and get around the cousins, get around the family and get on the lake or up the mountain.
And again, I think we've touched on this a little bit, but what does success look like to you personally, professionally, or both?
I think it would just be the balance of getting the balance of life and working hard, but also having that balance of family life and getting that reward of being able to enjoy time with children and getting away. And success of the brand would be just utilizing more wool and getting it into places around the world that we hoped to get to. mixture of those.
Cool. So that's the end of the bigger questions. Like I said to you before, I even more so now after talking to you, I just think the business that you're building and the brand, and it's just wonderful. And like I said, I can't wait to see where it goes from here and to learn more about the story. I'm going to go and watch Country Calendar tonight. So the final bit of the podcast is just my quick fire faves, which is a little bit self-indulgent, but I just like to see what people are reading and watching and all of that kind of thing. So we just start off with 3 items that you couldn't live without.
Yeah. Can I say Harry and Gussie?
Of course you can.
They are just, everyone, just my little besties. But then, I would say my tote bag as a mum, and living on the farm. When you're leaving for the day, you end up packing like, when you live where we live, you pack as if you're going away for a week.
Yes.
Because you never know if you're going to get stuck anywhere or the road's going to be closed or whatever. So you got to pack all things and my tote bag just fits it all. Two children and...
I do love how in your socials that you share how you guys and your friends and family use your products. I think that's really cool. Like, I was just thinking, I've seen you, like, this is how we pack on holiday and this is how we... And it is good to see. I always like knowing that.
What, especially Sam's always driven as well, is like we're making products that are just for people like us. And so they're nothing super technology advanced or like... Showcasing what everyday people are doing.
That's cool. Which app for business and or life do we need?
This would be for business, not a big app person for life, but for business wise, it would be, which is slow, probably boring, but for us, Instagram, big showcasing behind the scenes. Because we live where we live, it's super important to showcase behind the scenes. We don't, our retail store we've got now, but otherwise we don't have a physical presence in a huge population area. So we can show on there is super important for us and to be as authentic as we can on that.
Do you use Pinterest as well?
No, but we're just about to. We're going to launch into that. We're working with a company and going to start one.
Yeah.
TikTok, but I don't go on it myself really.
Pinterest is an interesting one because it does get a bit forgotten in a sense, but it's such a powerful search engine type tool that it's hard to do all of them and do all of them right. And you want to put all your time in. And actually, one good piece of advice I got years ago with someone was that they picked one platform and just did it really well. And I think that's what you guys are doing with Instagram, isn't it? And you mentioned before Asana, which I actually put a question box on this my Super Creative Instagram recently because I am searching for my perfect to-do list. And I actually did used to use Asana years ago, and I've been trialing using it. It's not quite doing what I want it to do, how I want to organize things. But have you found Asana game-changing for you?
Not game-changing.
Oh, okay. I'm
great at using it.
Oh, you're like, it could be game-changing. Yeah.
But I'm also not great at putting things that are in my head onto it. Yeah. So I feel something that connects your brain to an app.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's getting into dodgy like AI kind of territory, yeah.
No, I know that it will be super helpful, and when I do use it, it's great.
Yeah.
I use it more. So if you find a better one.
Mm. Oh, this is my problem at the moment. I'm a bit obsessed with it. So I've signed up to all of them, and then I've got so much to do, and then I'll spend hours and then be like, oh no, I'll just go back and I just write it all out by hand.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, just do pen and paper. What have you watched lately that we must see?
Oh, I was quite excited about this question because I'm into it at the moment. It's Tour de France Unchained. Probably very boring, but it's like one of those...
Like a Drive to Survive type one? Ah, okay, good.
Tour de France is, I think, just about to start. Probably why they've done it now. But I am deep into it, and wow, it is a good watch.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, because I got heavily into Drive to Survive when it first came out. And there's obviously, because there's a golf one now and a tennis one. I don't know if you've seen. And yeah, I started that one when I was away, but I need to get back into it. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, so watch that one.
Cool. So obviously where you live, dining out is possibly not, there's many options, but maybe just share places you like to eat or drink anywhere in New Zealand.
Well, I could probably help you out in terms of if you're driving between us and Wellington.
Great. That's a good one.
There's my cousin's cafe, MoMA. It's right on State Highway 1, and really great spot. It's really tricky to find somewhere to stop from Wellington North.
Mm.
And yeah, place for the kids to run around and great scones and coffee. And
cool.
That's cool. And then, in Palmerston North is Orlando Country, which is a great place to hit golf balls, get some lunch, conference area. It's got a nine horse golf course.
Cool.
And that's my sister-in-law's family business. So that's cool there too.
Great. You've got lots of great family close by. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you listen to music? And what should I add to my playlist?
Worst person to ask. No.
I'm a bit like that too. Yeah.
Always have been taking the piss out of for getting the words wrong or not knowing names, artists.
So what do you do when you go to Spotify? Just find a playlist?
Yeah, I'm a big radio listener.
Yeah.
No, radio listener. Or I always go to my friend Polly and see what she's listening to because I know she listens to music.
Yeah.
I listen to the playlist on Spotify.
Yeah. I'm actually a bit like that now. I've got a few people that I know or follow, and I just be like, what are they listening to? I'll just do that. Yeah.
But at the moment in my time of my life, a lot of Wiggles.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we talked before that you don't get a lot of time to listen to podcasts. Is there any that you do listen to that you can recommend?
But there was this really good one, a business podcast. I love listening to that. It was lots of just New Zealand businesses. It was 4 years ago now. It was just one that I've always recommended to others, similar to yours, interviewing some really cool people that have done cool businesses. Heather Duke-Lacy Allen did it. Yeah. And then another regular I always listen to is my friend Polly or PJ. Good friend of mine and launched a podcast a year or so ago, and yeah, she's just your random mix of everything. Mm. And I feel like I'm listening to a mate. When you're living where we live and get out for a walk or something, it's you don't really have a mate to just say
yes,
go for a walk. But whereas if I'm listening to her, I just feel like we're just chatting.
Are you a foodie? What's your kind of go-to recipe that you would cook for yourself or others?
I've got this really, it's from my mum is a very good cook, and I wish I had her culinary skills, but if I ever need any recipes or anything, I just ask her what I'm going to make. It was a really good recipe. You literally just throw, it looks like you've made this heaps of effort, but you're literally just throwing chicken breast, olive, feta, cherry tomatoes, bread, ciabatta bread, and oil, and sun-dried tomatoes, and it, no, not sun-dried tomatoes, oh, something else, I'm not saying. Mm. Anyway, bake it. Beautiful.
That's actually my dream. That's what I like, because I'm not very good at cooking, but I like those sort of things that you can throw everything in and it looks incredible. Yes.
Yeah. And
everyone
loves
it. Yeah, great. Okay, that's a good tip. And do you read? And if so, what should we read next?
Well, look, I wish I would say yes to this, and I would love to be a reader, but I'm just not. And even like during school, I don't know if you had to do this when you're at school, but you had to read a certain amount of books every year and write.
Oh, yeah.
I was always one that I used the books each year and did that same.
Yeah.
From the year ahead, and I was like, yes. Oh, I've read this again. Yeah, no, I am not a big reader.
You got a lot going on.
I'm part of this book club.
Right. I love it. Yeah.
It's pretty much just friends in a wine club, and we get all live rurally, and we meet like once every 2 months or something. And everyone brings a book recommendation, and I'm just the one that brings a podcast recommendation.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Just come for a drink.
Yes. Do you have that at Honest Wolf, the book club, or do you do it at someone's home?
Oh, no, it's at someone's home.
Oh, so that would be, that would be a cool thing to do, get everyone into Honest Wolf and just wind.
We're actually going to have a ladies' night soon.
Oh, cool.
July, we're having Jessica Flora, which is a rural girl down south. She's bringing up her clothing and bringing it into store. And then Eva and Archie, which is a baby brand, a friend of mine. And we're just going to have bubbles and food.
Awesome.
Yeah, for a shopping night.
Yeah. I love it when people get to use those spaces for stuff that's outside of the business and the brand.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be cool.
Please. That's cool. Oh, that's it. That's the end. We've had a long chat. But it's been so wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story with me. And I feel like I've still got a million questions, but I will just keep following on Instagram. No, it's so cool, Sophie. I really appreciate it. And like I said before, I'm looking forward to seeing like where you take the brand and where it goes. And yeah, when you're in Harrods, I'll be like, yeah, I talked to her 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And I think chat.
Thank you so much for listening. I would love to hear what you think about the podcast. And if you wanted to tell your friends about Super Creative, I would just be ever so grateful. If you'd like to keep listening, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you wanted to rate and review, that would be amazing. For more information, find us at Super Creative Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Bye.